It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, we'll find out about a new project that aims to break down barriers between veterans and the communities that they return to. We'll hear about the Veterans Coming Home Project.
First, we're just days away from Wisconsin's presidential primary. While the nomination picture is clearer now than in recent weeks, many political observers will be watching Wisconsin's results really closely, especially because historically we've been pretty good at picking the candidates who go on to win their party's nominations.
Philip Bump joins us now. He's a writer for the Washington Post politics blog, The Fix, where he recently wrote about why Wisconsin is good at picking presidential nominees. Philip, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
First of all, you say that the nomination process is pretty stupid, but it's what we've got. Why do you think it's stupid?
Well, I had forgotten that I said that as explicitly, so I will now own up to it. Essentially, it's stupid just because it's a giant mess, right? I mean, normally, the party sort of backfilled this process of having primaries and having caucuses that directly relate to who the nominee is going to be because people were mad that the party was just sort of picking the nominee at the convention. So it's sort of dumb the way they do it because they still sort of expect there will be a consensus candidate, that person will win. The Republican Party has all these different systems that it uses in all these different states with the anticipation they're going to end up with like a Mitt Romney, who's someone everyone can agree on. So it's not prepared for a situation like this year when everything is totally messy and dramatic because the process wasn't built to actually be a streamlined one.
So as you point out, it is the process that we have. We have to make the best of it. And Wisconsin is taking its part in the primary process next Tuesday.
Right.
And you took a look. You wanted to see who has the most influence or who actually gets it right when it comes to picking candidates. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, this year we kind of matter, but that certainly isn't always the case. It seems like usually everything is kind of wrapped up with a bow on it by the time you get to Wisconsin. With those early states, you know, Iowa and some of the more eastern states. So how do they do at picking the eventual nominee, the early states?
Well, the early states, I mean, it's tougher for them, right? Because so Iowa was presented this year, for example, with 12 different candidates. Wisconsin has 3, right? And so when you have odds like that, so when you're always going early, you always have more candidates who you can choose from who will end up not being the nominee. So they sort of have that working against them to some extent. But on the other hand, states like Montana, which you tend to go very late in the process, has a worse record than does Wisconsin. So there's something about Wisconsin in particular where Wisconsin has been better able to predict on both sides, both Republican and Democratic sides, who the nominee is going to be.
So who is, before we get to the best,
sure,
drum roll there, but who is the worst at predicting?
Alaska, actually. Alaska, again, usually comes somewhere in the middle, but they had a very bad run from 1976 to 1996 where they only picked one proper nominee. They've done better since then, but yeah, that's just, you know, we're not talking about that many contests either, right? It's only really two handfuls of presidential nomination contests. So if you get a couple of them wrong, then you're basically out of the running on best state.
But, you know, even given that, Wisconsin looks pretty good. In fact, Wisconsin is the best at predicting the eventual nominees. What does our track record look like?
Well, you guys have only gotten one wrong, and I think it's very funny that you've only gotten one wrong. The one you got wrong was 1984, when you guys, unlike most of the Midwest, decided against Walter Mondale. And I like to think that's just the traditional rivalry, Minnesota versus Wisconsin. But Wisconsin picked Gary Hart. That's the only one since 1968 that Wisconsin has not picked the nominee for either side.
Yeah, Gary Hart was pretty wrong. And you also point out that when it comes to hometown advantage, that's when states can kind of mar their record a little bit when it comes to choosing.
Exactly. I mean, I tried to give states a pass, you know, Tom Harkin in 1992 in Iowa, right? I mean, like, of course, Iowa is going to vote for Tom Harkin in 1992, even though he didn't really have much of a shot over the long run. So, you know, I looked at it both ways, both for people who were including home state misses and, you know, excluding those. Either way, Wisconsin was still the best state at it.
Any other takeaways that you've gotten from this about how states actually do when it comes to predicting?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty remarkable. I mean, keep in mind that usually in most non-crazy years, which this year happens to be one of the crazy ones, you usually get your nominee fairly early in the process, then all the other states just give them a thumbs up, right? Despite that, though, there still are a lot of states that have a lot of misses, which means that these contests have gone deep enough into the cycle that people are still voting and still voting for who they would like to see be the nominee and having that not be the case, which I thought was interesting because we tend to think of these usually as being sort of acclimation processes, but that turned out not to be the case.
And what about the middle of the pack groups of states? Were there any surprises there when you looked?
Not particularly. You know, I mean, most of them were generally about in the same range. You know, there were a few that got them really wrong, like Alaska did. I mean, Alaska's only gotten it right about a little over a third of the time. But for the most part, it's generally pretty consistent, right? I mean, most states usually get it right, occasionally don't, with, you know, a few rare exceptions.
So since the sample size is, as you point out, it's pretty small, does this actually matter at all? Is this worth anything when we think about Wisconsin's place?
It is worth bragging rights, and that's about the best I can offer. You know, I mean, it is certainly not the case that whoever wins Wisconsin is going to win the nomination. I mean, look at this year, right? New polling suggests it's going to be Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders, and neither of them is likely to be his party's nominee. So actually, your record may go down the tubes here this year. But I would not use this if I were a betting person. I would not head down to the casino and put money on this.
Well, we're talking to Philip Bump right now, writer for the Washington Post politics blog, The Fix. And we've been talking to him about why Wisconsin has historically been number one when it comes to picking presidential nominees. We only got one wrong, and that was Carrie Hart in 84. And I know, Philip, that you've also been writing about that contested convention scenario.
Right.
And what might happen if a nominee, you know, talking here on the GOP side, if a nominee has a plurality of delegates, has got a lead in the delegates, what might happen when we look through the lens of history? What do we know?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, again, and I have to go back to this point that this convention process is controlled by the party. This is not really meant to be a democratic process. And so if you look back over history at all the times that on the first ballot no one has had a majority of the delegates, most of the time the people who come in and on that first ballot are in first place, they end up not getting the nomination. Someone comes in from behind them and passes them. And I think there's a reason for that, which is that those people weren't popular enough to actually get the nomination. It may have been in a lot of cases like this year when the establishment didn't want that person to win, but they had still done a good job of getting delegates together. But then they get passed at the convention itself. So it suggests that if Donald Trump goes to the convention, has a plurality of delegates but not the majority, historically speaking, he would be more likely than not to not be the nominee.
I'm processing that statement. So, yeah, not good news in that case for Donald Trump is essentially what you're saying if you look through the lens of history. And if you go back to the 1800s, it sounds as though this is a scenario which actually did happen a few times.
Yeah, there have been some really, I mean, when you talk about contested, there's contested and then there's contested. And there have been some times that there have been a lot of votes that have been taken. If you look, for example, at 1912, the Democrats had 46 different ballots before they ended up with Woodrow Wilson as their nominee. If you look at 1924, the Democrats went to 103 ballots and ended up losing that presidential race. I mean, this can go on and on and on. Of course, most of this happened in the era pre even radio, right? I mean, this happened in a pre-mass media environment. This year will be different from the standpoint that the RNC wants to do what it wants to do. The Republicans want to have this convention play out to the benefit of the party, but there's going to be a lot of people paying attention to it, a lot of Trump supporters paying attention to it. So it's going to be harder for them to enact their will sort of by fiat because they're going to have all these eyes on them.
Right. We have candidates who are very active, their campaigns on platforms like Twitter and Facebook. And do you think that could put pressure on the delegates besides whoever might be twisting their arms at the convention?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, but it's so hard to predict because this is outside of the realm of what we've seen recently. I think that the RNC probably, and they could even do this before the convention arrives, but I think that they will go out of their way to make sure it is as smooth a process as possible. But that's not the path that Ted Cruz, for example, is taking. Ted Cruz has done a very good job of organizing these individual delegates themselves, the people who will be in that room, so that even if they have to vote for Donald Trump on the first ballot, he wants people in that room who, if on the second ballot, if they are released to vote for whoever they want to by the rules, they will vote for Ted Cruz. There's a lot of stuff going on in the background here, so it's very hard to predict what might happen.
Philip, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Philip Bump, writer for the Washington Post politics blog, The Fix. He joined us there to talk about why Wisconsin has historically been number one when it comes to picking presidential nominees. We also talked a bit about the scenario of a contested convention and how likely that person with the plurality of delegates is likely to get the nomination. Answer, not very.
Well, and this could really change the statistics if somebody, you know, who was approved by no states. Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney are names that have been thrown around. That means that zero states would be right on the Republican side. So very different numbers possible next year.